All right, hey True North, welcome to another episode of our roundtable. I'm here with Pastor Jay and myself, and we also have a very special guest that's not part of our church, but I thought was very a wise guest for our times currently in November of 2020. We have Dominique McKay. She is currently working at a PR firm in DC, but as she will tell in a little bit, had an extensive history working for the Senate GOP. But hey, Dominique, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm really excited to chat.
Yeah, same. Before anything, I don't think most of our people at church will know your context. And for me, at least for me personally, I'm a big political junkie. So I think I know about politics. But when we came across just communicating on Twitter, I was like, oh, she really knows politics for a lot of reasons. But could you give just a quick history of how you got into politics and what your journey consisted of on the Hill?
Definitely. Well, I would say, you know, the more you know about politics, the more you know you don't know. So it's a deep well. But I got started in politics back in 2012. I graduated from college in 2009, and that was during the recession. And I couldn't find a job because I had majored in journalism. And that was when a lot of journalism jobs were being cut because of really because of technology to some degree, and then also because of the recession. And so I went back to college and ended up getting a master's degree. And then my mission was always to go to DC. I love DC. I was always interested in politics, but really thought I would be doing journalism until the recession. And then once the recession hit, we as in my generation, pretty much was looking for jobs wherever we could find them. And most of those jobs were in the city. And so my goal was to come to DC, and I got an unpaid internship on the Hill right out of grad school. And then I stayed there and kind of just advanced as time went on. I worked for a member from Oklahoma. I worked for a committee that covers education and workforce issues. And then I went to work for Senate GOP leadership, and that was my last few years on the Hill. So it was a great time, and you know, I love politics, and the community there is really great, and that was one of the main draws as well.
Gotcha. Quick question. Is it as crazy as House of Cards makes it seem on the Hill?
You know, that's so funny. When I first started, a lot of people would ask me that. And I would say, no, it is not like House of Cards at all. It is not like the West Wing at all. people here kind of joke. We joke that it's a lot more like Veep, if it's anything.
Yes, that was going to be my follow-up question.
That is like heartening but also scary at the same time.
Yeah. Awesome. And you know, some of the things that happen here, I don't even think people would really believe. You know, it's so silly. Yeah. That you know, people are like, I can't believe this stuff is going on. But but yeah, it's a fun time overall.
I'm sure it is.
And now, throughout your experience working on the Hill and working with different representatives and being on the committee, what was maybe one of the most fulfilling aspects of your job working in politics?
That's a really good question. I always say my work that I did actually on the committee was probably the most rewarding. The committee is the bulk. Committee work is the bulk of what Congress does, really forming legislation and working both Republicans and Democrats together to get bills passed. So that was definitely the most rewarding work that I did on the Hill. But I also just love the environment of Capitol Hill. It's kind of similar to a college campus in the sense that we have, you know, several different buildings, members and staff from all over the country that come together throughout the year to work on legislation. And so the environment in the community is also just a really cool part, a really cool and unique part of being in DC and working on Capitol Hill.
So one question I have is someone that's in kind of the system or was in the system. How did your own faith, your Christian faith, affect your politics? And also, how did your politics shape and change maybe your Christian faith as well?
That's a great question. You know, I come from a pretty diverse family background. My family is mixed racially, and we are also a military family. So traveled a lot, moved around a lot, lived overseas. And I think, you know, that really helped me as I was entering into politics. My background, my diverse background really helped me as I was entering into politics to also have, you know, a diverse way of thinking when I entered into the system, you know, as you say. But I think as a Christian, because of my diverse background, my faith was always first. My faith was always my first identity. And so really it was, I feel like God really set me up throughout my life to prepare me to be into politics, to enter into politics. Because of that background I had, my faith was always first. And so then when I went into politics, you know, that was always secondary. My political stances was always secondary to my faith. And if there was ever any conflict, you know, for me, it wasn't a struggle to choose my faith first.
Gotcha.
And I don't know if that really answers your question, but.
Yeah, but, I don't know.
But that gives a little background.
Yeah, that your faith kind of, it seemed like the faith that you had in Christ was your anchor throughout, like.
Yes.
Not just your work at the Capitol Hill, but just your life, which I think is hard, you know, encouraging to hear. So kind of transitioning, I think one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on was I think everyone thinks they know about politics now because it's a cool thing to talk about. It's interesting to me because I think before, like Bush Gore, it wasn't cool to follow that debacle into the year 2000. But now it's cool. It's something a part of the culture, which I find interesting. And I think a lot of people are including myself, like self-professed quote unquote experts in politics. But as someone kind of on the inside or that was a little more closer to the action, you know, I think you probably know better than us that our nation is very divided at the moment. There's hundreds of articles on the New York Times, Atlantic, that all talk about this. And I think what's interesting is it's even more apparent in the church as a whole in America that, you know, when I'm on Twitter or just the discourse that churches use, that division has bled into the church. And one question I had is, why do you feel like we've become so divided, not just as a nation politically, but especially within the church?
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. As things have, you know, as time has gone on, we've definitely become more divided even within the church. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, with the rapid change in technology in the most recent, you know, couple of decades, I think there's just this, we're kind of bombarded with information at all times. And I think that when change happens, which, you know, throughout any society, things are going to change, things are going to shift, culture is going to change. Usually that happens at a pretty slow and steady pace. Sometimes there are events that might speed that up. But generally it's at, you know, a moderate pace where people can get comfortable with changes. And I think because of technology now, that's happening very rapidly. And when change happens fast, it just naturally creates conflict because there hasn't been enough time, whether the change is good or bad, there hasn't been enough time for people to adapt and kind of think through, really, is this good change? Is this bad change? Is this what I want? Is this not what we want as a country? And so it's all just happening so fast, and that creates conflict. And I think that people feel pressure to choose a side quickly, and they don't feel equipped to, they don't feel educated enough. And so all of that creates friction. And I think that's what we're seeing now. And really, I mean, really that's only been, I guess, heightened, you know, with the invention of the iPhone and having so much information at your fingertips all the time. So I think we have a hard time adjusting. And I think we're seeing that in our politics and in our church.
No, that's actually a really good point. I was in college during the Al Gore, George Bush election. And, you know, the only time that we'd get any kind of information or maybe you know, what you know back then would be considered a meme would be like SNL, you know, and that only happened once a week, you know. But now with meme culture and just social media, all that information is just right at your fingertips. And I think people are just being bombarded with different sorts of information and different memes. And it's just really causing a lot of friction and tension within our culture because of that. So,
yeah. And it's also like snippets of information. So it's not, you know, it's not enough information for you to really digest, to do a deep dive and digest kind of the history and the background. It's just snippets of information that you kind of have to, in a split second, believe or not believe. And I think that also creates a lot of chaos in our communities.
Which I am guilty of. I should get off Twitter these days. But it's like a drug. You can't stop, especially now, because there's something new. Literally, like, there's something probably happened since we started this interview.
Right. We're missing a lot of things right now.
For reals, which is crazy to me. So given that, you know, I think, how would you advise Christians to inform themselves on politics? Because I think our natural mode is social media. It is Twitter. It is Fox News or CNN or whatever it may be. And yeah, how would you advise Christians, especially now in 2020, how should we wisely inform ourselves on the political discourse of our nation?
I think there's a couple things. First, I think really it's helpful for individuals, particularly Christians, to really become more involved in their local politics. I think a lot of what we give so much attention to is the presidential election, our national elections, but really our day-to-day lives, as we've seen with COVID, it's really impacted by what's happening at the local level and our local leaders. And I think developing relationships with those people, going to meetings, meeting their staff, developing those relationships can help you develop a baseline of understanding about what's going on in your city and about the political landscape. So that's kind of where I think I would recommend people to begin their entry into politics, as opposed to just kind of reading their Twitter feeds and taking in what everyone else is saying. But I think even on the national level, I would also recommend people to read, instead of going to Twitter first, kind of educating themselves about some of the history of the parties, reading political memoirs, reading some of the political biographies of various staffers and members of Congress, presidents, just to get some of a background of what's gone on that you may or may not know about. But it also helps to humanize politicians and their staffs. And I think that's really helpful, because then when you see something that just seems outrageous, you might question it, you know, because you now have more of a empathy for members and their staffs. And I think that's really important too.
Yeah. It seems like you're almost implying politically, we want to know what's going on right now, but it's even more important to know what happened in the past, why the parties are the way they are, why the candidates are in places where they are, which I find to be helpful. So one curious question I have is, what was, this might be a very big loaded question, so if you can't answer it, totally fine. But, you know, given that, what was kind of like the stress level and life like working on, you know, you were, from what I read, you were working press for basically the Senate GOP, which is a very, seems like a big task. And I guess to give us a better feel of like, what was that life like? What was the stress like? What were kind of the struggles that you went through as you were doing that?
Yeah. So to give you guys a background for people that don't know kind of the makeup of Congress, we have different kinds of offices. And so we have typical offices, what we would call a personal office, and that is kind of a member's office. So I worked for an Oklahoma member, and that's the office that primarily serves constituents. And then we have committees, which is what legislation is passed through. But then we have what's called leadership offices, and each party has a variety of leadership offices. And so I worked for, specifically in the GOP, we have a communications office for the party. And so we basically, it's basically like a PR firm, essentially, for the party. And we help all of the members with their communications, but we also staff the chair, who was my boss, and getting him interacting with press on behalf of him. So there's definitely a lot of pressure, particularly around most very controversial events, such as the Supreme Court nomination of Brett Kavanaugh. I would say that was probably one of the most controversial events that I was involved in on the Hill in terms of as a staffer. There were many protests. There were lots of people harassing staff, members on both sides. And it was very intense. And I would say that's something rare on the Hill, but it was something that really kind of opened my eyes to the impact that media does have on our politics. And so there were many, there are various events that I experienced on the Hill that, were very intense and very pressure filled.
Sure.
But I will say I had a good community of staff that I worked alongside, and that's very helpful in those times.
Gotcha.
You know, just going back to your point about, in getting involved in local politics, I was wondering, what are some advice or like if for someone who doesn't know anything about how to even get their foot in the door? Do you just go to a city council meeting, or do you just walk into the mayor's office and just like introduce yourself? Like, what are some maybe practical steps that people can do to start getting more involved in local politics?
Yeah, city council meetings are a great way to start. It also helps you just to kind of learn what the city is considering, what are things that they're thinking about. And you also can see just how everything works. But yeah, going to different member offices, even here in DC, our offices are open to the public. And so anyone can come by and meet the staff and set up meetings on different issues that they care about. So definitely, I think that's something that people should look into on the local level, going to their local city government pages, which usually have the resources and links to where the meetings are going to be at, when they're going to be. That's a good place to start. But I would say, you know, even if you're in DC, I mean, if you're in DC for a vacation, you should come by and visit your member of Congress. The office is open, and you can definitely, I mean, granted, you may not get to see the member of Congress because of meetings, but, you know, you could at least meet the staff in the front office and let them know that you're from their district or from their state, and just kind of get to know them and hear about their backgrounds. And it's just helpful because you learn, oh, these are the people that are representing me, and these are the people that are fighting for the issues I care about. And you get to learn more about them. And again, it humanizes our politics.
And sorry, another question on this latter part of your conversation. You mentioned something about the media and how they kind of, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it seemed like they had a role in how divisive the Kavanaugh situation was. And for people who are maybe very distrustful of mainstream media these days, do you have any advice or thoughts on how we as Christians can maybe filter through media or look through media in wisdom or even just graciousness? And how do we, process all the news and information that we're seeing in our news feeds and our TVs?
Yeah, you know, the media definitely plays a role in our politics and in, to some degrees, sensationalizing a lot of events that happen, even hard, tough events, which I do think the whole event was a very challenging thing for everyone who was involved. I think there's a way to handle some of those controversies without sensationalizing them. And I think that's something that the media does struggle with now with cable news, with the speed and pace of news, there is a need and there's, you know, a force within that community to be first and fastest. So I have some empathy for them for sure. I think that for us as consumers, we have to be really, really careful about the amount of news that we consume, and also the source, obviously. But I think the amount of news that you consume is a big part of it. Let's say, you know, as you're saying in the 2000 election, I mean, maybe your parents or, you know, someone who had voted in that election got, you know, updates here and there. They weren't reading a news feed as we all were over the weekend, you know, 24/7, just consuming. And so that actually really does affect your mental health, the amount of news that you're consuming, regardless of whether the news is correct or not. But I also think you need to read across a number of sources and not just go to your one favorite news channel, your one favorite newspaper, your one favorite commentator, and just say, well, if they said it, you know, it must be true. You have to be very well read and read across variety and even some people that you may disagree with to get a flavor of what is actually going on here. Because at the end of the day, media is a business and they are trying to get you to put your eyes on their web pages and click their links. And so you just need to be cautious of that and definitely be well read.
So
advice, thank you.
I think this is a perfect segue. Given that, I'm going to kind of ask a little more, I guess, hot takes questions. So, you know, this election was crazy, to say the least. And there's a lot of things we can go into. But before getting into the election current events, one question I had, which you kind of already pressed on, is this idea that we should hear from all sides. Like, if you're only reading The Atlantic and New York Times, I mean, there's probably something wrong with your, you know, information. And on the flip side, if you're only reading Daily Wire and Fox News, again, same thing. So it seems like we're living in echo chambers. And I think my question to you, and a question I'm struggling with, is I think it stems from this two-party system that we have in America, that it almost forces you into a binary choice of politics. That's either you're pro-life and a lot of these things, or you're pro-immigration and you're a lot of these things attached to it. So one question I had as someone that worked for a party was, do you think that the two-party system in America is compatible with our faith as Christians?
It's compatible with our faith. You know, I don't think there's any party that represents Christ.
Sure.
So I would argue any party, whether it's one, two, three, no matter how many parties that we have, there's never going to be a party or a collection of parties that fully represent a Christian worldview. So I'm not sure that it would be necessarily helpful from that angle to introduce more parties. But I will say, I think it would be helpful for Christians in terms of kind of discerning and choosing perhaps to have more choices. But I would caution people who think, you know, the solution to divisiveness is to have more parties or to have more people and ideas. I think, as we've, you know, to be honest, as we've seen with the church, you know, having multiple different denominations and ideas, it doesn't really help to unify us.
Yeah.
And so I think while it would give us more options and put us maybe in as an individual in a place where you feel a little bit more comfortable than right now.
Sure.
I'm not for sure that it would make us less divisive.
Sure.
Is what I would say.
It's just pick your poison almost. That like,
Yeah, I think it's tough. I think it's tough, but I feel like we're at a place where people feel very uncomfortable with the two parties that we have. Mm-hmm. And I think we're at a place where the ideas that the parties have don't, you know, probably don't even fully define what America has become. And so I think, you know, in that case, you know, we could be at a place where we would need to shift some of the platforms in the parties, which we've done time and time again, you know, in American history. And so I think, you know, we are at a point where that could be the case. And we might need to, you know, refine some of the platforms and ideas.
So a follow-up question I have is, as someone who is or who was working in politics and also a Christian, how did you interact or dialogue with maybe somebody, another member in the church, who may have had opposing views, as you know, compared to you, or maybe might have been a lot more dogmatic about certain topics or issues? And how did you deal with those type of relationships?
Yeah, you know, here in DC, there are a lot of people that work in politics who are Christians. And there are a lot of people in your church that work in politics. So that actually happens pretty frequently for you to interact with people who are maybe on the other side of the aisle or maybe on your side, but just as you were saying, you know, more aggressive about their politics. I pretty much go back to the basics of the faith when I have conversations with people who are Christians who may or may not be idolizing their politics or their political party a bit. I think it's a challenge. It creates a lot of interesting and difficult conversations. But I found when you kind of confront them with the basics of the faith and what our real purpose is here as Christians, to love God and to love others, and also to, you know, spread the gospel to others. I find that that's actually very influential. I think sometimes Christians get just so caught up in the day to day in our experiences here. And it's not even intentional in most cases, but it's just, you know, the culture that we live in. And so I find if I bring them back to the basics in the conversation, it's very helpful.
Did you ever, were you ever at a church, or I guess you were at one church when you're in DC the whole time, you're still at, were you ever at church where there was a staffer from the other side that was at your church?
That's a good question. I don't know if, not particularly at my church. None of the Democrats I know attend my church. But I do know a lot of Democrats who attend local churches in DC. And I have, you know, Democrat Christian friends, and we engage in conversations on the issues all the time. And it's fun. I enjoy having that diversity in my friend group of having people on both sides of the aisle who I may or may not disagree with. And
no, I think you bring up a really good point, because I think one observation that I've made is the politics of America has become geographic. So a lot of times we're in the Bay Area. To find a red-leaning Christian is like trying to find a unicorn out here, you know? That's like trying to find a Democrat in Kansas, maybe, at a church. So I do think a problem of that is we become echo chambers where we don't have friendships with people from the other political aisle, which is cool that you were able to do in D.C. because you have all those people there together. And yeah, I guess, you know, outside even the church question, like how did you interact with the Democrat staffer friends? Like what would that look like? Did you have points of tension? How was that worked out? Or was it just, you know, was it just a normal friendship, just like any other friends that we might have?
Yeah. So it kind of depends if they were Christians or not Christians. So that changes things. And that's the same for Republicans as well. I actually really sought out on both sides of the aisle, non-Christians, just because I think that's a part of God's will for our lives. But I would say for the Christians that I know who are Democrats, we actually talk about everything, you know, from a Christian perspective. So anything that has to do with politics, even the most recent election, we talk about and debate a lot of what's going on from a Christian perspective and say, you know, if there's an event going on that I think is wrong, they think is right. We kind of just debate it out. But I think because we're Christians, you know, there's this common bond there that regardless of the debate, we are still friends at the end of the day, and we're still a Christian family. And that's really a nice thing to have. But I really am very intentional about doing a lot of work to develop relationships with my friends on both sides of the aisle who may or may not be Christians, like a baseline of friendship and compassion for them, and to display that to them before I'm ever in any kind of debates with them about politics. Because, you know, once someone knows that you care about them genuinely as their friend, it's not going to hurt them if you disagree with them on issues, you know. And so I think that's a really important thing. You have to develop a camaraderie with them outside of the things you disagree on first, and show compassion to them first before you can really have debates in a healthy way.
Sure.
Now, one of the questions I had for a lot of our working people here in the Bay Area, whether, you know, they're all working in the big tech companies, being a Christian has become very private in their workplace. And I'm not sure what the culture is like in politics and in DC, but I know that you've made it a point to publicly be a Christian while you were in politics. And what were some of the challenges of that? And maybe some advice on some of our, you know, working people who might want to take a little bit more bold stance in their faith. Maybe some advice on how they can go about that in a very comforting and friendly way, as opposed to kind of
Right. I think, you know, it's tough being... It's tough making the choice to be very public about your faith, because I think a lot of people are afraid that if they're out there just publicly representing Christ and they mess up, you know, it reflects badly on the church. And there's a lot more added pressure. I think for me, I felt it was really important to be public about my faith, because I really do genuinely think that's a part of our call. And so I really had to trust God that, you know, even if I did something or said something that really wasn't reflective of his heart, that he would be able to reconcile that with those people that I had spoken to. So that's kind of a baseline. What I would say to Christians who are really kind of questioning how can they implement their faith kind of more publicly in the workplace is, again, back to developing those relationships in the workplace. I think one of the things that you first want to do is develop friendships, in the sense of whether you are going to their birthday parties, going to their celebratory events, being intentional about developing just a baseline relationship with your coworkers, and not kind of just coming to work, doing a good job, but just checking the box. You know, it's more you are investing in their lives. And that begins the process of then sharing about your life and, you know, talking about the things that you're involved in, whether it's at your church or in some small groups. And sharing them just kind of naturally as they would share with you things that they're involved in, whether it's CrossFit or you know, whatever they love. So you have to kind of develop that first baseline of investing in who they are and in their lives, and kind of even if they engage in lifestyles that you don't support or would engage in, which I have lots of friends that are in those situations. The point is that I have compassion for them and I love them as people.
Yeah.
And I will continue to do that regardless of whether they kind of come into the faith or not. And so I think it's, you know, it's developing that compassion for them and showing it to them first. And then, you know, as time goes on, I mean, I never hide that I go to church on Sunday or that I'm involved in church or that I have events. I mean, even in my new job that I started at the start of the pandemic, you know, if I have events that I'm going to for church and I can't go to something, you know, I just tell them, oh, I'm going to this event. But it's very interwoven into my life.
Yeah. I think that's really good advice. I remember when I was working at Office Space, there was a work function and I said, I'm going to a small group. They were they didn't know what that meant. And I was like, oh, it's a great witness opportunity, you know?
Right.
So I think that's really good advice. Lastly, I wanted to kind of end our time. I guess just wanting to hear your own reaction, takes and opinion on this election and the aftermath of it. You know, I think election, if I'm honest, election night, like I didn't sleep because the TV was on, my Twitter feed was on, New York Times electoral map was on. I was just refreshing over and over and over again. And, you know, it wasn't an election day, it was an election week. And still, there's a lot of things going on right now. And I guess, you know, it's a lot, right? But I guess for you, Dominique, one thing I wanted to ask you is someone that worked on the Hill and kind of is familiar with everything going on. What was just your own, I guess, first take on everything that transpired after Saturday, after the media outlets declared Joe Biden the president-elect?
So here in D.C. area, there was a lot of, obviously, D.C. is a very liberal city. So there was a lot of celebration and I think relief in the city that a decision had been made after many, many days of kind of pending, waiting. Sure. And so the city was very jubilant about it. And I think, you know, to speak to the other side, I think there's a lot of division, as we've already talked about, in America. I think there's a lot of frustration with both of the parties and who is being pushed up into leadership within those parties. I don't think that Americans are settled or really satisfied fully with the government that we have overall, you know, on the national level. And I think that's been a longstanding frustration. I think it's going to continue to some degree. And I think that's hard. And that's something that we're going to have to navigate together as a country.
Yeah, I mean, it seems, and again, I'm playing like political nerd analyst, which I shouldn't be, but I wanted to hear your own takes too, that it seemed like when I saw the election results that it's all the polling suggested that there would be this huge blue wave, that people were just fed up with Trump and everything he symbolized. But it wasn't that. It was actually quite the contrary, that it seems like the Republicans might hold the Senate, the House. The Democrats barely won. Biden, I mean, he seemed like he won, but it wasn't what it seemed like. And it seems like America as a whole is rejecting both sides, that they're just fed up with what Trump represents, and I guess what the GOP party is sliding to, and also the extreme reaction to the left of everything going on too. And I guess I want your thoughts too. It seems like it's actually an opportunity for the church, that America seems to just have kind of said, no, we're not buying into either narrative as a whole right now. And it is divided, but one, I guess, hope that I had was, I think we're still confused and homeless, because I think a lot of people are getting to realize, like, these broken people that are politicians won't save us. These broken parties won't save us. And that's one thought I had. And I guess maybe just, your thoughts on the future of, like, how can we find hope? How can we find unity for the church and even as a nation living here in America?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think that the election really showed that people were not satisfied on either side of the aisle with what's happening. And I do agree. I think it is an opportunity for the church. I've actually, you know, this entire year has been very challenging for the country and for the world at large with everything that we have going on. And I think it is all of these events, you know, are coming to a head in this year. And I think it is showing many, many people that the things that they found comfort in, you know, are not ultimate eternal things. And that's across the board, not even just with politics. I think this year is making people pause and think, what am I getting my value and worth in my day-to-day life? And how do I need to reevaluate that? So I think, you know, this year has been, while very, very challenging, I think it is an opportunity for the church to step in and kind of clear the way for people to know and to learn about the gospel and about our identities in Christ. I think that even that has gotten buried to a large degree within the church. And so I think this is definitely one of the maybe only times in our lifetimes that the church will have the opportunity to kind of step in and make very clear what they represent, who they represent, and what their mission is here.
Now, a quick follow-up question. I know that you're working in PR currently, and the view that the country has of evangelical Christians is probably not the greatest right now. So what would be, if the church was your client, what would be some of the advice that you would give the church so that we can have a better public persona where people can actually trust that we have mm-hmm. their best interests at heart?
Yeah, you know, that is really true. I think among evangelicals and Christians at large in America, I think there really is a need to, I go back to our identities. I think there really is a need to define our Christian identities in Christ. Because right now we are very wedded to the culture and we are very involved in it. We are, you know, loving our American lives. And I think that there is just a need for there to be some separation publicly from that. There needs to be some distinguishment of, again, what do we actually believe and like, what are we here for? And I think practically, you know, a lot of that is about service and serving others. And I think the church needs to get back to focusing on that, back to local level, serving those in your community day to day. Even with COVID, we've had some communities who have adopted some of our international restaurants in our international communities and said, you know, well, we're gonna buy from you during COVID to help you in this economic slump. And it's things like that define to people what the church actually represents and how we are called to live.
That's a great point. Thank
you. So enough of the blog posts. Just get out the door is what you're saying.
Yeah. Right.
I totally agree. Dominique, thank you so much. That was a great time. Thank you for all your time. You know, as you're working the PR firm, we pray for you to be a witness there. And just thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much. It was so great chatting.
Yeah, and we're waiting for you to run for some sort of office so we can vote for you. And
I'll come back to you guys. I'll come back to you guys for that.